Balls there in space, staring at her with my mouth open, until she reached over and nudged it gently shut with a talon.
You'll catch space debris. Sorry to buffle-skate you.
I was buffle-skated speechless, an extreme rarity for me. As I hung there, staring, I replayed my years with Shazam through my mind. His mysteriousness, his constant disappearances, his other form I'd know nothing about, his constant cagey, evasive replies to so many questions, the odd juxtaposition of extreme emotion and wisdom.
We are not permitted to interfere or influence our chosen's choice in any way. We are never to have contact after the initial invitation. I've told them that's why we have so few young, but they don't listen.
Yuril, slash Shazam, looked abashed.
When you got lost in the Silvers, you were so lonely, like I once was, and I was afraid you would die. I came to you in my Hellcat form to help you survive.
All those times you disappeared?
I had to be Hunter, or I would lose the right. I could only spend half my time with you.
But Shazam is so emotional, and you're, well, more composed.
As a human, you strike me as quite emotional, too.
Yuril slash Shazam said, sounding slightly miffed.
You saw my wisdom on occasion. I wasn't always emotional.
Then?
When we shift, we are what we once were, flaws and all. The enormity of Hunter can't fit in a small skin. Another reason most of us choose to remain Hunter. It is difficult to get used to being tiny, driven by our biological natures again.
Yuril shuddered, sloughing black ice into the air beneath her wings.
Being Shazam is humbling. I am a very different creature in that form, needy, tiny, lonely.
Then her eyes gleamed, and she said,
You were a good mother to me. I will be to you as well, in this form.
Oh my God, Shazam! I exploded, as it finally fully penetrated. You're my Shazzy Bear! Yuril smiled.
I am. I couldn't tell you. They say if we breach that one rule, our child will never be born.
That's why my black hand never bothered you. I always wondered why I could touch you. Yuril nodded.
Also why I told you to make it go away. Reminding you that becoming one of us was your choice. You said you wouldn't even if you could. I chose well with you. Your desire for adventure is exceeded only by your desire to care for worlds. We do much of that up here. One day, you'll see.
See what?
The threads that connect everything. We tend them. We sew them.
I began flying again, gingerly, then with greater gusto. I was flying in space. With Shazam! Holy hell! I always knew Shaz had another enormous form and stayed up in the air, but I'd never once imagined that form was a hunter. I'd even written that ditty about Shaz, the mighty fur beast who lived up in the air, and us battling dragons together. I snorted with laughter, and it came out as a soft, delicate trilling gong, accompanied by twin plumes of fire from my nostrils. Criminy! I just shot fire from my nose! Hunter half the time, woman the other half, with Ryadin half the time, with Shazam the other half, with incredible adventures to be had both ways. Fierce exhilaration filled me.
I knew you'd think so.
Yuril slash Shazam said smugly.
Come, I have so much to show you.
As excited as I was to see more of my new home, Ryadin couldn't feel me anymore. First, take me back to Earth so I can...
Send him one of your texts, Yi-Yi, and let it go. You have all the time in the universe. Others are waiting to meet you. Few are chosen, far fewer born. Most rejected. Only the fearless join us here.
Ha ha, a text, I said dryly.
Ah, I forgot. You won't be able to do that for some time.
She sighed.
I suppose I'll break yet another rule for you.
As I watched, Uriel turned, churning ice beneath her enormous leathery sails, and focused her attention on a nearby star.
What do you want it to say?
I tried to nibble my lip, and gouged myself in the cheek with a fang. Ow! This was going to take time getting used to. Tell him I'm okay, and I'm coming home soon. A thin bolt of pale purple lightning, fine and laser-sharp, erupted from a taloned hoof as Uriel carved a tiny chunk of the star away, etching words on the face of it that shimmered like stardust. Then, abruptly, Uriel vanished and reappeared far beneath me, caught the chunk of star and brought it back, tossing it to me. Holy flower balls, she could sift! That meant I could sift too! I'd eclipsed Batman a million times over. I caught the chunk of star, cupping it awkwardly in my hoof, marveling. One day I'd be able to carve messages on stars. Etch a twisty D for Danny all over the bloody universe. Criminy. Dancer would be beside himself if he could see me now.
Throw.
Huh? How? Where?
I'll correct its course. Just throw it.
I did, launching it into space. Then Uriel spun midair, batted it with her tail, and sent it rocketing off at such speed that it vanished from sight as if it had entered a black hole.
It is done. He has received your message.
I understood a bit about travel in space, and said dryly, When? 5 million years in the future?
I adjusted it so that he would receive it at the proper time.
You can manipulate time? I was awed. She nodded. I can do that too? I practically shouted.
Thank the stars, no. You must grow into your hunter powers. It takes a very, very long time.
Do I have any hunter powers right now? It may have come out sounding a bit peevish, but seriously, I was a dragon. I wanted some juice. You're real chuffed.
There's my yee-yee. A few. But when you become human again, no.
You mean except for the lightning? I liked my lightning bolts. I wondered if I'd be able to use them now without turning black.
Not the lightning. That is part of the birthing process. You will be as you were before you changed.
Sucky. Still. But I'm immortal now, aren't I? I said. And if I'd been human, I'd have been bouncing in hyperspeed from foot to foot.
You can be killed in your human form until you've spent enough time as a hunter that you complete the full transition. You must be careful when human, Yi-Yi.
For how long?
You would consider it a very long time. Now come, let me show you your new home.
My new home. All the worlds were my oyster, half my life. The world I loved was mine for the other half. I turned my head from side to side, drinking it all in. A velvety, exquisite, enormous expanse of space, and one day, the mysteries even of time. Beyond that, if I chose to die, I could become as a planet. This was, I decided, bemused and stunned, the greatest superhero gig of all. I was a hunter. Like the caterpillar, compelled beyond reason to spin itself into a cocoon, I'd grieved the transformation, believing I was losing my life. Deep down in a place I never let myself feel, I'd actually been afraid. I'd mourned, only to discover wonders I'd never dreamed possible, becoming an entirely new thing. I might fly riding up into a starry night sky, soar overhead while his beast hunted. A dragon and a beast, roaming the earth together. God, the things we could do now. It was a future I couldn't wait to explore. How many months? I demanded.
For what?
To shift.
I said years.
I said smugly, right, how many months? Come on, Shazzy Bear, break another rule for me. Uriel sighed.
You're going to be a handful.
I grinned. As if you weren't. I get to be the kid now. Teach me how to fly like you do. Teach me how to sift. Come on, Uriel, show me everything.
With pleasure.
When Yuril turned with a sharp, beautiful, dark swoop of her powerful hunter body, curving the merest tip of a wing, I imitated the motion and, together, we glided off into the starlit sky. 38. There's nothing left to do tonight but go crazy on you. 4 months later. I lope up the front stairs of Chester's, marvelling at the sensation of having a woman's body again, and at just how much Raiden accomplished while I was gone. Chester's above is a stunning modern 6-story building of pale limestone and vast expanses of glass. The wide curved staircase leads to ornate steel doors, heavily etched with wards, as is everything of that man's. He likes to protect his property. As I push one open and step inside, I smile. The domed foyer has sleek black marble floors, simple white and chrome furnishings, windows all around, and faceted skylights casting rainbows on the floor. I can feel the bass from here, rising up from the many sub-clubs below. I'm a woman again. It's strange and exhilarating, but I have to admit, being a hunter, flying among the stars for the past few months, was beyond my wildest dreams. Yuril and I played with the abandon we'd shared Silverside, with one difference. No predators, no enemies, just adventures. I'd visited worlds beyond describing. Drifted inside nebulae. Played hide-and-seek in meteor fields. Watched stars go supernova. Slingshot around moons. Played in the gaseous rings of planets. My hunter body, impervious to harm. I barely scratched the surface of discovering what it was to be a hunter. Yuril was downright mysterious about many things, and full of annoying patience, grasshopper, sayings. According to her, I would learn when it was time, and no sooner. Still, I had a fair idea my potential was virtually limitless. One day in the future. Unlike Shazam, who lived to break rules at every opportunity, Yuril preferred to adhere to them. It had taken me weeks to convince her to help me transition back into my human form before I'd learned to do it myself, then another 4 months to get her to actually do it. She'd then warned me that I had a single week in human form before she came to reclaim me. I thought it was half and half, I protested.
Not at first. You must settle into this skin. If you stay human any longer right now, you might lose your hunter form.
Oh, hell, no way, I'd cried. Still, I felt like the luckiest woman in the world. I had a whole week with Raiden. After believing I'd lost him forever, a week felt like a small eternity to me. We'd flown to Dublin, landed on top of the building that housed my flat, where she'd shifted me back into human form, painful, then reverted herself into Shazam. We hurried. I was naked. Now I understood why Raiden always had extra clothing stashed in convenient places. Below to my flat, where Shazam flashed me a mischievous grin and muttered a cryptic,
"Go to him. He's been waiting a long time,"
before curling up for a nap on our bed. I'd taken my first shower in months. Not that I seemed to need one. Dressed with care, weaponed up, and freeze-framed straight for Raiden, electrified with excitement. As I push through the second set of doors, my smile deepens. The street-level bar and restaurant is lovely, with an elegant staircase that descends to the sub-clubs. I dash down the staircase and stand behind the balustrade, surveying the dance floor, looking for him. It's early evening. The club is hopping as usual, and I'm pleased to see not a single fae. A part of me wants an immediate update on events in Dublin and our world, wants to head to the Abbey and get all the details, but I learned a valuable lesson about time from both Dancer and Raiden. We don't always have as long as we think we do. Updates can wait. It's necessary to be selfish sometimes, and tonight I have every intention of it. It was pure pleasure to slip into a black spandex dress, heels, and nothing else but creamy Irish skin. Knowing I'm about to slip out of it and go crazy all over that man's big, powerful body. I want Riordan in my bed, inside me, all around me, and that's my only goal for a good long while. Before I have to leave again, I'll catch up on my world. Tonight's for me. Tonight's for us. And it's long overdue. I descend the final set of stairs, thinking maybe I'll find him in his office, and push through the crowded dance floor, heading for the glass and chrome staircase to the 9's private levels. I'm nearly there when someone blasts into me from behind, seizes me in a steely grip, drags me the rest of the way to the stairs, and shoves me down on the steps. Has to be one of the 9. No one else can noodle me like that. I toss my hair from my eyes and scowl up. Then, "Lor!" I exclaim, delighted to see him. He stares at me in utter disbelief.
"Danny?"
"Mega in the flesh." I flash him a 100-megawatt grin to prove it. "I'm back, and you are so never going to believe the things I've seen and done." Then Fade and Castillo are there with him, all 3 of them staring at me, with a mixture of irritation and disbelief. "What's with you guys? I told him I'd be back."
"The boss,"
Lore says flatly.
"You told him that?"
I nod. "I sent him a message."
"He sure as fuck doesn't think you're coming back,"
Fade growls.
"And I'm sure as fuck glad you are, because he's been goddamn impossible to live with. Go fuck him and make him sane again."
He turns and stalks away. To Lore I say, "He thought I wasn't... Wait, I don't understand."
"Just go to him, honey,"
Lore says.
"He's in his suite. Never comes up. Spends most of his time as the beast. Ain't eating, ain't sleeping, ain't fucking. And it's getting ugly around here."
I surge to my feet before he even finishes speaking, lope up the stairs, taking them 3 at a time, dash onto an elevator and tap my foot impatiently as it descends. How could he not know I was coming back? I don't believe Yuril would lie to me. I frown, remembering her exact words.
"I adjusted it so he would receive it at the proper time."
Okay, so what was the mysterious being's idea of the proper time? When the door whisks aside, I explode from the elevator, freeze frame down the hall, and blast through the door into the anteroom of Riordan's suite. It's still trashed. He never cleaned it up. Broken glass crunches beneath my heels as I stalk to the hidden panel that conceals the doorway to his true suite and push it open. As I step into the room, I inhale sharply. This room too is trashed. Every piece of furniture demolished. Savage claw marks scar the paneled walls. The chandeliers are torn from the ceiling. Wires dangling, exposed. Crystal splinters glistening on the floor. The bed is a collapsed jumble of wood, with slashed velvet pillows, shredded linens, pulverized mattress. I narrow my eyes, letting them adjust to the gloom. He's here. I can smell him. That spicy, darkly exotic scent that always clings to his skin. Animalistic, druggingly masculine, blatantly sexual. I can feel him. Every nerve ending in my body electrified by his presence. There's more in this room. Rage, fury, grief. It's embedded in every demolished item, gouged into each panel, carved in deep gashes across the floor. He grieved me. Believed I was never coming back? But why? All my senses are cranked up to full volume. This is my night. My choice, my long-denied, deepest desire, and I feel achingly, incredibly alive. I hear him inhale, as if questing the air, catching my scent. Then a rough laugh floats from the shadows near the fire, where he sits in a tall armchair.
"Not again,"
he says with a rasp of agony in his voice. I wince. I know the power and persuasion of hallucination. I lived it in my cage. I'd wake from a tortured slumber, smelling food. Certain, Mam had come home, and I was going to open my eyes to a heaping bowl of my favorite creamed corn, topped with a crispy helping of fried chicken and green beans, only to find there was nothing there for me to gnaw on but my own knuckles. Again. I knew the despair of the moment the brain processed the deceit. That hope crumbled to ash. That the thing you wanted so desperately wasn't there, and maybe never would be again. He smells me and thinks I'm a dream. I intend to fulfill every one of his wildest ones tonight. I step carefully into the room, skirting bits of debris and broken glass, trying to decide what to say, how to convince him I'm real. Some of my hallucinations had been so extreme they'd nearly unhinged me. I'd actually eaten imaginary meals. Starvation messes with your head. Sustained deprivation of anything you desperately need does. He desperately needed me. I like that. I feel the same about him. I decide the best approach is to simply touch him. Let our bodies do the talking. As I skirt the shattered coffee table and approach his high-backed armchair, I inhale sharply, butterflies fluttering from my stomach to my throat. I'm nervous? No. I'm exhilarated. Okay, a little nervous, and have no bloody idea why. Just that this man has always rattled me. God, this is it. He's here, I'm here. My skin is flawless ivory. We're free to be together, to be everything I've ever hungered to be with him. I know I'm real, yet even I almost can't believe this moment has come. I'd thought it would never happen, that I'd lost us forever. Still, I was quickly disabused of my grief. He's been grieving me for months. I clear his chair and circle to stand in front of him. He tips his head back and stares at me, with narrowed silver eyes, stained with crimson streaks.
I'm getting better at this,
he mocks.
Christ, you look so fucking real, so fucking sexy in that dress.
His gaze rakes me from head to toe. Heat floods my body. Fire ignites in my blood.
I never told you. You define beauty for me, Danny O'Malley. Copper flames and emerald ice. The snow and rose of your skin. Those insanely powerful legs. The steel in your spine. The unquenchable fire in your spirit.
Well, fuck. He'd silenced me. I'd stand unspeaking for an hour if it meant he'd keep talking like that.
You're unbreakable, woman. None of it ever broke you. You're my fucking holy place. Do you know that? Why the fuck didn't I ever tell you?
I swallow hard, tears stinging the backs of my eyes. His holy place. That's exactly how he feels to me. He's my temple. I slip into his presence, and the world melts away. And I'm safe, and together we can face anything, do anything, survive anything, always find the next way to be together. I think that's what love is. Holding someone sacred, honoring them, protecting them, living up to the very best of them. The grief, the pain, the fury in his gaze slays me, humbles me. I will never doubt the depth of this man's emotion. It's evident in every too tightly drawn line of his body, the stony set of his face, the half-wild look in his eyes. I drop to my knees before him. Holy hell, he's beautiful. I've never seen him like this, dressed only in a pair of low-slung faded black sweats, skin poured over rippling muscle, glistening gold in the firelight. This is Raiden's slumming. His face shadowed with beard growth I'd never seen, that makes him look diabolic, dark, fascinating. He smells like beast and feral fury, and no shower in a long time. And I don't give a damn. He smells exactly right to me. Danger. Edges sharp enough to cut myself on. And I know he'll heal my every wound if I do. His perfectly cropped hair is long, messy, as if he's been running his hands through it. He's too lean, skin tight against bone, and I know he hasn't fed in a long time. I reach out and place a palm flat to his hard, chiseled chest. No heartbeat. He definitely hasn't eaten recently. You might want to, I tease. I plan to wear your ass out tonight, babe. He cocks his head, eyes glittering, nostrils flaring.
Even if I were starved, you couldn't wear my ass out. You're an illusion. I let you get away. Hell, I fucking threw you away and I shouldn't have. I should have fought for you. I should have told you everything. I should have persuaded you to reject what was happening.
I slide my palm from his chest down over his six-pack abdomen, trailing my fingers lightly over his velvety skin. You didn't throw me away. You did the hardest thing possible. Sacrificed your own desires for my best interests. Trying to keep me here, almost completely black, unable to ever use my power again, would have destroyed us both. Neither of us is wired that way. We push the limits, we adapt. It's what we do.
And my illusion offers absolution,
he says with a snort.
I am getting better at this.
I drop onto his lap, slinging my legs one over each side of the chair, and take his face in my hands, stare into his beautiful eyes, fire and ice, blood and steel. Do I feel like an illusion to you? My dress is hitched up nearly to the top of my thighs. I lower myself, slowly, firmly against him. He's hard. He's so fucking hard. And I'm so fucking painfully alive and starved to have him inside me. I don't need foreplay, not this time. I just need it done. Him in me, over and over. Maybe the next time I get to be human we'll bother with foreplay. Maybe I'm not much of a foreplay kind of woman. His hands close on my waist tightly, fingers digging in with anger, with grief.
You'll never do. I've spent hours touching you, holding you, days fucking you in my mind.
I say lightly, do it again. But it's me. I get to be a woman half the time, dragging the other half. Still, I only have a week. You really helped me change so I could come back and tell you I was okay. Spend time with you until I learn to transform myself.
That's the most lucid, coherent explanation you've offered yet,
he says dryly, gaze fixed on my lips. Because it's the true one. Kiss me. See how real I am. I drop forward, brush my lips to his, and my hands are at the top of his sweat, and I'm so damned wet it's glistening on my thigh. He inhales sharply, pulls back, glances down. Then his hand is on my thigh, and he's tracing the slick heat up my leg. He groans.
I don't recall it ever being quite this real. Fuck.
Yes, please, I say with a half laugh, half growl. Now. Then he's surging to his feet, and he's pushing me back on the floor on a thick fur rug, and I'm sprawling with my legs spread and his mouth is on my thigh as he shoves my dress up over my hips. Then his mouth closes, warm and wet between my legs, and he's licking and sucking, and I hear someone screaming and realize it's me, and holy hell, orgasm for me is a full mind-body explosion. My brain flies open and shatters into starry pieces, and my body is electrified, and I buck against his face as I writhe beneath him. Then I'm surging up, still coming, desperate to get him inside me, because I've come too many times by my own hand thinking of him, and this is real, and I want it all. And I'm launching myself on top of him, shoving him back to the floor and slamming down on him with violence and lust and need, and his eyes are flying wide and flashing blood red as he snarls,
"Fuck, you're real."
I have no idea what convinced him, and I don't care, and I throw my head back and half laugh, half roar, as I take Riordan Killian St. James inside me and clench every muscle in my lower body that I'm so bloody grateful to have, and I don't have to be careful with him because I can never break this man in any way, and I can vibrate.
Bloody hell, woman, don't do that yet.
But he's on his back beneath me, and I'm riding him, and I'm in control, and I'm vibrating, and goddamn, yes, he's losing control. And this is the only way I ever want to see this man lose his hold on reality.
Paybacks are hell,
he snarls as he explodes inside me. And all I could think is, I hope so. I hope he pays me back over and over again my entire immortal life. Then he's shuddering, and his head is back, and he's laughing up at me as he comes, and I cup his face, that beautiful, sexy, familiar, challenging, stubborn human skin poured over a beast face I will never tire of looking at, and I catch his joy in my hands, and it blazes inside my heart. Later, I thumb up Magic Man on my cell phone and crank up the volume. Later, I dance naked for him in the firelight, and I tell him that I know it's not a spell, but it's truth that this woman-child dragon has been waiting for him all her life. Exaltation blazes in his eyes. As he takes me down to the floor, and he gets the top this time, the bastard. And he tells me something I file away but don't ask about just then, because my mouth is busy, and I like it being busy in precisely that way. He tells me he's been waiting for me much longer than a lifetime. I have no idea what he means. I don't care. He's inside me, and I'm inside him, and the future is as vast and enormous as the starry skies that are half the time my home now. Much later, I demand to know what happened at the Abbey, and he tells me that Kat and the Shedon survived, but we lost 142 she-seers that day. I'd indeed killed Baylor with my final blast, and after I'd vanished, Riordan scratched a long chafing itch. Papa Roach was dead, slain at last by that lethal black blade Riordan had been threatening him with for so long. Oz was in the battle too, but escaped and lived to torment us another day. Still, I was back. I was powerful, and one day, that cooing little leprechaun would be mine. Roisin had joined the women at the Abbey, although she had no she-seer gifts, and was working with Enyo, recruiting other displaced, disenfranchised humans, moulding them into an army, giving them purpose, a cause to fight for, a raison d'être. God knows we can all use one at times like these. Mac and Barons were still gone. No sign of the Fae in our city for months. Yet I knew, although neither of us said it.
Fuck that,
Riordan says tightly.
I'll say it, and we'll print it in the Dublin Daily, because the world needs to know and prepare. Our greatest battle is yet to come. It'll be the Fae, not the old gods. Those bastards are going to turn our world into a war zone, and soon. There's a scarce contained violence in the earth. I feel it rumbling beneath my boots. A darkness on the wind. I can scent blood on the breeze. They're planning, conspiring to seize this planet for their own. War's coming. And if Mac doesn't gain control over power, it's one we'll lose.
Then we need to make sure Mac has enough time. He growls assent. Any news of Christian?
Same. Kat's been spending time at Driacht Keep, working on Sean. Still no progress there. He destroys every living thing he touches.
People? I gasp. I know the horror of that.
No. As famine, it's only living plants and crops. People and animals are exempt. Those are Christian's specialty.
Any trouble from other gods?
Not yet. But I suspect we've only seen the tip of the iceberg there. Humans and gods will have to unite to have a chance against the Fae.
Somehow, I vow silently. We'll make that happen. Bright side, we now have a hunter on our side. And who knows? Maybe I can rustle up reinforcements. He laughs.
If anyone can persuade the unpersuadable entities, it's you.
Then he's on me again, and we're battling for dominance, because we always will. That's the way we're wired, and I lose myself in passion and think no longer of this world or anything in it. He's my ground zero, my mecca, beast to my dragon, always. When I was 14 years old, I watched Riordan having sex on level 4 at Chester's, the subclub devoted to providing the carnal excess necessary to keep the Nine's beasts under control. I smile faintly. I'm Riordan's carnal excess now. That day, so long ago, I marked him as mine. There it is. The truth. Crucify me for it if you want. I don't care. I was never a normal 14-year-old. I've never been a normal anything. At 14, I'd vowed one day I'd be the woman making him laugh, making joy blaze from his face. So tangible it seemed I might catch it in my hands. I would trace the imperious, regal, stubble-shadowed planes of his face, close my hand around his cock, and take him inside me. I'd be the one responsible for the firestorm of lust in his heavy-lidded gaze, for the savage rumble deep in his chest, the guttural raw sounds he made when he came, half-roar, half-laughing, erotic purr. Not with my 14-year-old body. I wasn't ready for sex then. But one day, with a woman's body, the man was mine. It wasn't just lust I'd felt the afternoon I'd watched him fuck. And yes, I'd been capable of lust at that age. For life, for the sex I would one day have, for chocolate, for being alive. I'm made of lust. We all are. Savor it, burn with it, never apologize for it. It's what makes life worth living. I know a truth. We fuck like we live. Timid people fuck timidly. Uninhibited people fuck uninhibitedly. He'd fucked with 1,000% focus, with savage devotion and lust. Staggeringly alive. Elated to be. It's the way I've always lived. Fully engaged, all senses ablaze. I recognized that day that he and I were the same kind of people. I hadn't thought to ever find someone else in the world like me. I'd been wandering the city on my own for 6 years by then. I'd seen and done far more than any child should. When I think of Ray, I know how wrong my life was, and I'll do everything in my power to keep her childhood pure. Not that Kat needs my help, but I'll be there, watching over her. Always. I'd paid prices few adults ever have to pay. I'd carried sins that cut me to the core of that soul I used to pretend I didn't have. Sins that had forced me to find creative ways of rearranging myself so I wouldn't self-destruct. Ancient eyes had stared out of my 14-year-old face at Riordan, and I'd thought, this man will understand me. This man can withstand me. That's something for a woman of my complicated ilk. He's a pain in the ass. Stubborn, controlled, controlling. So am I. He's done unspeakable things. So have I. And I suspect we'll easily speak about them with each other. He's fascinating. Brilliant. Hungry for more life all the time. So am I. He's life and death, joy and grief, mercy and ruthlessness. So am I. It was hard for me to move through those years between us. I resisted what I knew I wasn't ready for. I resented every woman he took to his bed in a dark, possessive corner of my mind, including Joe, even though I understood. Then life unexpectedly gave me a man I was ready for. And Riordan had understood. But always, endlessly, I'd been pointed at this man like a beast-seeking missile, waiting for the day I was not merely locked and loaded, but fully ready to take him on, woman to man. That's what Dancer had always sensed in me, and loved me anyway. I think both my loves are better men than I. I can't share. I can't be second best. I don't know how to play that role.
You'll never have to,
Raiden assures me as he closes his arms around me from behind and grinds hard and hungry against my ass. You should know I'm possessive. His arms tighten around me.
As am I. You and me. No one else. If you're not okay with that, get the fuck out of my bed,
he says as he begins pushing slowly inside me. I gasp and thrust my hips back, needing to feel him cramming me full, like earlier when he'd been a part beast, so deep it nearly hurt in the best possible way. I'm not a woman to compare. We all bring unique assets to the table. But Raiden's assets fit me stupendously well, and the fact that they were adjustable, well, that was a plus a woman had no reason to expect, and every reason to thank her lucky stars for. He laughs softly against my ear, as he slides infinitesimally deeper, breaking my nerves with a savage need he's creating, and refusing to fill, driving me mad.
I suspect the stars will always be lucky for you, Denny.
Growling, I push back, hard, but his hands are locked on my hips and he won't let me gain a bloody quarter of an inch.
Let me play, Stardust. Learn what turns you on. I want to drive you wild. I want to find your breaking points, all of them.
That makes two of us. Although I never want to see him lose control in the real world, I hunger to strip it from him in bed. 1 inch, then gone, rubbing between my legs, where I'm swollen and achingly wet. Then 2 inches inside me, then gone, and back, and slow. So slow, I nearly scream with frustration as he eases into me, as if we had all the time in the world.
We do.
Laughter explodes from me. Pure joy. Eternity. I get to love this man forever.
Fuck, Danny, stop laughing.
Afraid you'll lose control? I tease and laugh again, a husky, wicked sound as I kicked it up a notch and began to vibrate from head to toe.
Son of a bitch.
Later, I sprawl on top of him, staring into glittering, lazily sated silver eyes. It's a good thing the room was already wrecked, because we'd have wrecked it anyway. I have no idea how much time has passed down here, where no light of day penetrates, but I'm willing to bet we've spent 24 straight hours exploring each other's bodies, testing limits, discovering what drives each other wild. And this man is definitely wild, hot and sexy, and just the flavor of kink I like. I've only got 1 week, I remind him softly. He stiffens and growls as I fill him in on all that happened, explaining the parameters of my new existence. His silver eyes blaze with joy.
Half the time we'll be human. The other half we'll be beasts together,
he says, laughing softly.
What a fine fucking life.
Indeed. Still, something's bothering me. I need to know why he thought I wasn't coming back. What Uriel did with my text. Raiden, didn't you get my message? I sent you
a bloody chunk of a star. Christ, that damned piece of rock has been the bane of my fucking existence.
So he did get it. It was meant to set your mind at ease.
Your aim sucked, Stardust,
he growls. He rolls me off him, surges to his feet, stalks to the hearth where he collects something from a box on the floor and brings it back, handing it to me. I peer at it in the low light and gasp. It says, I'm okay, I'm... But that's only half of it.
I bloody well know that. What the fuck is the end of that sentence? You have no idea how many words I plugged in. I'm okay, I'm happy. I'm okay, I'm free. I'm okay, I'm never coming back. What the fuck, Danny?
I turn the chunk of star over and study the edge. It broke. It must have hit something on the way to you. Where were you when you got it?
On a beach.
I frown. A beach? You went to the beach? Lore said he'd not come out of Chester's since I left.
I used to walk the ocean at night. It plunged from the sky and landed next to me.
When? He laughs, but there's a deep undercurrent of bitterness, a hint of torment in it.
Woman, you have driven me crazy far longer than you know. I got your bloody damned star 3,141 years, 5 months, 9 days, and 2 hours before you turned into a hunter at the Abbey.
I gasp. 3,000 years ago? What was your ill thinking? Was her aim that bad? Was manipulating time trickier than she'd cared to admit?
You're the reason I began to study linchpin theory over 3 millennia ago. You're the reason I began trying to project the future. You, Daniel Malley, have been the greatest and most irritating mystery of my existence. I smelled you on the star that night on the beach, the scent of a woman I hungered to know, unlike any woman I'd ever met. I waited to meet her, and waited, and bloody fucking waited. Found her one night in Dublin, an uncontrollable, swaggering child with a bloody death wish, balls of steel, a superhero complex, and a teenage boyfriend.
Oh, God. You knew I was the one who'd thrown the star when you saw me that night?
I'd given up on the whole matter long ago, decided the star was the equivalent of a text message sent to the wrong phone. Then I moved in behind you that night and smelled your scent. I knew you were her, the one who would one day throw a star at me across time. My world went to hell from that moment on. I had no idea what you were or what to do with you. I only knew one day you'd toss a bloody celestial body my way. Admit it, you never wrote any more than that. I tortured you so much, you decided to torture me back for a few thousand years.
I burst out laughing. If I'd thought of it, I might have.
That was all I had to go on. Then when you began to turn black...
That's why you were so certain I was becoming a hunter, I exclaim. Because they live among the stars. He inclines his head. Why didn't you tell me? He's silent a long moment, then exhales gustily.
It was mindfuck to an extreme. I was concerned I might change things.
Illogical? If it...
Already happened. Yes, it would, no matter what. I thought of that, too. Barons and I discussed it endlessly.
Barons knew?
My brother is the only one I told. I've learned to take nothing for granted in this world.
He's silent again, then says,
I'd begun to suspect that, because of my feelings for you, I'd try to sabotage whatever might happen. I questioned my motives.
I still, as the enormity of what he is telling me sinks in. From the day he met me, he'd known I would one day throw a star at him. No wonder he hadn't thought I was human. Then once I started turning hunter, he'd known the what of it, but not how things would end. He'd not known, even as I branded him, even as he encouraged me to embrace my destiny, if he would ever see me again. Still, he helped me through it.
No cages, Danny. Ever. Not for you. It was possible being a hunter would be everything you wanted. It was possible the final word was happy. If it had happened then, it was supposed to happen, and the only thing I could do was be there while it happened. I thought I'd lost you forever. The moment you turned, I could no longer feel you. I thought your star was your goodbye.
Never, I say swiftly. It was my promise to you that I was returning, to set your mind at ease. Because I didn't call you for those 2 years, and I should have. I wasn't going to make the same mistake again. I wasted those 2 years because I was stubborn and proud, and kept boxing my emotions instead of admitting them. That I loved you. I've always loved you.
So what the fuck did it say? Imagine working a crypto quip for 3,000 bloody years and never solving it.
I'm okay. I'm coming home.
Is this Danny?
He says quietly.
Home? Will you live here with me?
Always. Well, half the time. The other half of the time.
Bloody hell. I'm going with you when you go.
As high as I can take you without killing you, I promise. We would sail the night sky together, watch over our city, our friends and family.
I might surprise you,
he says, smiling faintly.
I don't need to breathe, Danny. Not all the time. Besides, I always come back.
I cup that beautiful face and kiss him, long and deep. I always will, too. That's our number one rule, Raiden. No matter what, we will always come back to each other.
A rule I'll never break.
He flashes me a wolfish grin.
All the others are up for grabs. You'll have to keep me in line. I'm not an easy man to handle.
I know that already. It's one of the things I like most about him. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my brain around the fact that he'd been waiting over 3,000 years for me. Something about the length of time he'd been waiting teases at my brain. Wait a minute. How long was it again from the time you got my star and I turned into a hunter?
3,141 years, 5 months, 9 days, and 2 hours,
he says flatly.
Wondered when you'd notice that.
I stare at him. Raiden, that's pi.
The first 7 digits of it. It was the hope I held on to, that we would somehow get all the rest of those digits too.
I'm stupefied. Dancer was right. There's pattern and purpose to everything. This spectacular universe knew exactly what it was doing. We will, I say, smiling up at him. I can feel it in my hunter bones. An eternity with this man was all I'd ever wanted. Whatever comes, whatever challenges we face, we'll ride them out together. It will be intense. It'll be dangerous. It'll be unpredictable. But it will never be dull. Not with him. As he surges above me, stretching his big, beautiful body over mine, I let go of everything, sprawl back, and tell him in great detail exactly what I want him to do. He complies with 1,000% devotion to the task at hand, as I lay back and take what I want, understanding finally that I deserve to, that I don't have to be super anything to be loved. Cages were funny things. Although I'd escaped with my body long ago, only recently had my heart finally broken free. Healed by the love of a man who'd been willing to sacrifice everything, even give me up if he had to, just to see me rise.
39. Uriel chuckled as her daughter disappeared into Chester's, racing to the arms and bed of the man she'd chosen for her when she tied the first of many red threads in Danny's life. Uriel had broken Raiden's star in half, sent him only, "I'm okay, I'm," to determine if he was worthy of her daughter. She'd sent it to him far in the past, to ascertain if he would be there to watch over her, and to assess what he was made of. He'd passed her tests with flying colors, helping her daughter evolve, even as he'd believed he was losing her, giving his love with no guarantee of a return. Tucking her wings close to her body, Uriel soared up into the sky above Dublin, watching over the city Danny loved, studying what only the most ancient among hunters could see, the countless red threads connecting lives that were destined to make history together. There was pattern and purpose to all things. One day, if she chose, Danny too would fly among the stars, studying worlds and tying those fateful threads. Only those with the purest, deepest, most resilient hearts could handle the delicate task. Her daughter certainly fit the bill. and would excel at weaving happy endings for others. But now, it was time for her to enjoy her own. Epilogue. Let my love open the door to your heart. Somewhere in time. On a planet with low gravity and four moons, a black-skinned beast bounded across sandy dunes. He was her best friend and lover. At the beast's side ran a hellcat, both her child and mother. Above them soared a majestic raven dark hunter, forged of passion, fire, and a teaspoon of stardust. Danny O'Malley had a family. She belonged. Deleted scenes. The following scenes were written during Fever Song, but for one reason or another, I either cut and rewrote them a different way, or simply chose not to include them. As my team and I were sorting through my notes, they enjoyed the alternate glimpses so much, I decided to include them here. Deleted Christian McElter scene from Fever Song.
Baron said, "Do you remember All Hallows' Eve when we summoned the old god at the Circle Stones of Bandrokade?" "How could I forget?" Christian replied with a tight smile. "You screwed me, and I got hurled into the Silvers where I turned into this." "I was hurled into the Silvers that night, too, because of you. I merely escaped more quickly." "And just how did you do that?" Christian said dryly. "Do you recall what I told you before we began the ritual?" "Yes, not a bloody thing." "I told you one thing you needed to remember, and you ignored it. I said, when it rises, greet it with warmth and respect." "The foul thing came exploding out of the earth, gunning for me. It was dark and ancient and smelled of bones and graveyards. And I was supposed to smile and say hello?" "You are dark and will one day be ancient, and you don't merely smell of death. You're the most lethal horseman of the apocalypse. Your legend will forever precede you. Yes, I bloody expected you to be courteous, yet you ran as if it was the vilest thing you'd ever encountered. It responded to you in kind. Our plan that night succeeded. You didn't welcome it. It left." "Well, why the hell was the onus on me that night?" "You attract power." Christian went still. He'd often felt that way as a lad, strolling the bends and vales of his highlands, tethered by a deep bond to all of it, earth to sky, dirt to stars, feeling as if the heavens themselves sometimes shot out a milky tendril to caress him, noticed him, observed him with curiosity. His druid connection to all living things was intense. He'd not even been able to fish as a lad because he couldn't bear the pain of the pierced worm, life stolen by the hook. The worm had enjoyed its dark, sweet, rich life in the soil, comforted by the rhythms and songs of the earth. And now he was the great stealer. "Why do I draw it?" "You have the potential for great good or evil. The universe notices." "Why the bloody hell are you bringing this up now?" Barons always had a reason. He never talked unless he needed to in order to accomplish an aim. "You're about to meet someone. Greet it with warmth and respect. I won't tell you again." Christian stopped in his tracks. "That thing from Samhain is here?" "Another of the old earth gods. This one, however, will not run. They will decimate you if you fear them. The old ones can be cantankerous." "Your pronouns aren't matching. What the bloody hell is it? One or multiple?" When Baron said nothing, he snapped irritably. "Where the fuck do you even find old gods? It's not as if they're just hanging about on street corners." Baron shot him a look of dark amusement. "You might be surprised. If you were one day summoned by those in need of your services, yet greeted with fear and hostility, what would you do to those who'd called you? Christian bared his teeth in a twisted smile. If someone dared compel his presence, then treated him with horror and rejection. Well, in his recent state of mind,